If you could come up, please, and... These are folks, at least two, who were here before. We didn't give them a chance to testify, and they've made accommodations in their life to come back from that long distance, and we do want to have you have an opportunity to say what you need to say.
Thank you.
And if you would be as brief as possible, we would appreciate it, because we've got two more complicated bills of which we need to get amendments presented to the committee. Thank you.
Madam Chair, Senators, for the record, I'm Florence Finnegan. I live in Coos Bay, Oregon, and I was present at the Judiciary Committee meeting on March 10,
yes,
when the bill didn't have time to be presented. Both personal knowledge and statistical evidence convinced me that this bill needs to be passed. Within just the past 2 years, I have learned that my daughter, who is currently a college student, was sexually molested as a young child by two offenders. One of these was the teenage son of good friends. This young man, besides molesting my daughter, molested one of his nephews and raped two of his nieces. My daughter tells me that she is convinced that she too would have been raped had she not kept her little brother with her for support and protection. The other offense was committed by a seemingly kind man old enough to be her grandfather. My daughter says she wondered and worried if she were the only child he touched sexually, so she watched carefully, and she saw that the man did indeed abuse other little girls. When she finally told her father and me of these offenses, we asked, "Why didn't you tell us? We'd have stopped it." She replied, "I was afraid. Children are." It's true. Children are afraid. They feel afraid of their molesters, of what someone will think of them. They feel guilt, confusion, embarrassment, helplessness. Because of these emotions, children rarely report an offense at the time it occurs. In most cases, it is years before the information surfaces. In our own situation, we have no recourse against the men who hurt our daughter. The statute of limitations has long run out. These men are free to continue traumatizing little children, and statistics show that child molesters have multiple victims. Dr. Nicholas Groth, author of Sexual Assault of Children and Adolescents, says that child molesters can never really be cured, but can learn to control their impulses and their lives better so that they do not need to turn to children to exert their power. Sadly, such people seldom voluntarily seek help. Rehabilitation is usually a long and difficult process that requires court-mandated participation. If these offenders cannot be brought to court, they will continue to molest. The number of their young victims will grow larger. I have only one problem with Senate Bill 276. That is, 6 years for reporting a sexual offense against a minor is not long enough. It will help, however, and will open the way to stopping at least some of the offenders from damaging the lives of additional children. We cannot reverse what has already happened to our daughter. We can only help her with her pain. It is difficult to know that her molesters are almost certainly continuing to traumatize other children. We cannot change the past. If, however, once we have knowledge and do not act on this knowledge, we must, all of us, bear a part of the responsibility for further abuse of other children. Thank you for your attention and your concern for this critical situation.
Thank you for coming, Florence. Ken.
Madam Chair and Senators of the Committee, for the record, my name is Ken Helvey from Junction City. And my wife and I are here today to show our strong support for Senate Bill 276. There is, however, one change we would like to have seen on this bill, like Mrs. Finnegan, and that is to extend the length of time recommended. Let me explain. Until several years ago, we were oblivious to these issues. Sexual abuse seemed like a sad thing that happened to someone else. Then we became victims. A young man with an extensive criminal record was out on probation due to Oregon's overcrowded prison systems. The time we came in contact with him, we were unaware of his long list of offenses. During his freedom, he raped our daughter over a period of 4 years. She was only 8 at the time, and he was 20. He also molested our son, who was only 6 at the time. Noticing that our oldest, two, seemed very withdrawn and depressed even before their adolescence, we began seeing a counselor. Through various psychological testing, such as picture drawing, their counselor was certain that they were sexual abuse victims. At her suggestion, we began the very painful process of reconstructing past events, and we, too, drew the same conclusion. Both children adamantly denied that these events had ever taken place, in spite of a trip to the emergency room after one of these rapes. Nevertheless, we contacted the police, who informed us that unless the children could testify, there was nothing we could do. As indicated in the Children's Services report to the Senate on February 27, 1989, children who have been molested are often not able to report the abuse until years after it has occurred. There are many reasons for this delayed disclosure. Child victims may be afraid of retribution from the offender or afraid of the effects of disclosures on other family members. Sexual assault is usually so traumatic for a child that very often is totally blocked out, only to be manifested at a later date. They are almost always re-victimized, primed for this crime because their defense system has been destroyed. Such was the case with our daughter. At age 17, on her way home from school function, she gave a ride to a student whom she had tutored. He, too, raped her. In a state of shock, she came home only to spend the night having flashback after flashback about the 4 years of rape she thought she had forgot. In desperation, she fought to forget all of the rapes, keeping all this a secret from her parents. She succeeded only in driving herself to the point of near total breakdown. On finally revealing the abuse she had received at the hands of the parolee, several more victims resurfaced. Realizing that they were not alone, they joined together to report this obviously dangerous offender. Now we were told it was too late. The statute had expired. Knowing that the perpetrator was again on probation for yet another crime, a drug-related offense, these victims contacted his probation officer with their confessions. She had the good judgment to request that her client be reevaluated. After 6 months of intense study by state psychiatrists, he was determined to be a pedophile, a real danger to young children. There is no doubt whatsoever to law enforcement and those involved that he is dangerous, and yet because he was not reported within the current 3-year statute of limitations, he still has the freedom to continue these crimes, most likely with extreme threats to his victims if they ever tell. Statistics show that many child molesters are in their 70s before they were ever caught. And it is through the confessions of adults who were his child victims, not children. Children are afraid and know nothing of the law or the statute. You realize how many children one person can molest before he reaches the age of 70, and how many of those children will repeat the cycle. After much community involvement pertaining to this issue, we would like to propose that this statute be amended to a minimum of 10 years, considering that this would give a 3-year-old victim up to the age 13 to report his abuse. One could hope that a 13-year-old would have the maturity to do so. Even with a 10-year statute, we feel the perpetrator would still have the advantages in exploiting victims. Because, as I have pointed out, most children are too terrified or emotionally disturbed to cope with their molestation. If we in our state are to do anything to help eradicate this loathsome crime, then we must make the laws to protect the victims, not the criminal. Please help us by extending this statute to at least 10 years, if not more. We talked timber and various other legislation. Let's have legislation to protect our most precious commodity, our children. In closing, I really question the integrity of any person or group that would even consider opposing this bill. I have very strong feelings on this bill, not only what I've written here, but the perpetrator that I speak of in this statement was actually an adopted brother of mine. So, you know, I'm not speaking of somebody I don't know. It's something that somebody that I used to be very close to. Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming. Audra.
Senator Cohen, members of the committee, I'm Audra Oliver. I'm of Salem, Oregon. I'm speaking on behalf of Senate Bill 276. One thing I need to add, having listened to the last Sessions' testimony on this bill, is that as well as being a victim of childhood sex abuse, I've also been falsely accused of child abuse, although not child sex abuse. I support this bill wholeheartedly. Senator Springer and Senator Hill have heard me at great length in the past, and I won't repeat that testimony. You have my written testimony. One thing I will add, when you mention the age 21, the thing I was aware of at 21 was that I was facing another variety of rape from my father at that age, and that I had to get out of the house. I certainly didn't have time to think about prosecuting when my 21st birthday was approaching. In closing, I want to add that I've watched this and related legislation for 4 years. You're not being hasty in whatever you do today. And I want to thank the chair and the committee for granting us a hearing. Thank you.
Okay. That's...
Madam Chair, would it be helpful perhaps to hear from Corey again and the district attorney regarding the length of the proposed statute and their reasons why they would limit it to 6 years and not more than three, or do you think there's sufficient knowledge on that within the committee? I don't want to prolong this, but I think it might be useful to have the perspective of law enforcement people on why you limit the statute. Like you're taking kindly to that suggestion.
Come on up, John. We'll get them all three, and then we'll hear all different sides of the debate again.
Madam Chair, Senator Shoemaker, to be real blunt, this bill was not the bill originally drafted by the DAs. We drafted a bill two sessions ago that got nowhere in the Senate. And then the previous session, we had a similar result. Frankly, the DAs would support a longer statute of limitations, particularly, say, for children under 12. You know, you could break it down to the younger the child is, the less likely they're to report, the more dependent they are on the abuser. There's a lot of reasons why the younger the child, the longer the statute of limitations. The six-year, three-year formula, to be real frank with you, was a political compromise. We would support a longer period if the committee were so inclined.
The reason for statute of limitation, I believe, is that evidence becomes stale, difficult to prove. Sometimes you're more apt to make a mistake in a conviction if you're using evidence that is old than evidence that is fresh. It can lead to a conviction when one should not occur. I guess what I'd like to hear from you is how you respond to that problem with extending the statute.
Yes, Senator Cohen, Senator Schumacher, that's a realistic concern, but it's the position of the district attorneys that that would once again be a matter of prosecutorial discretion and judging each case on its own merit. Some cases would not be hindered by the lengthier term. You may have a child that was abused at age 3 and tells about it at age 12, and the defendant confesses, and you have a relatively straightforward case. You may have a child that speaks at age, is abused at 3 and talks about it at 14 or 15, and there's nothing to support that, and it may simply be a case the DA would not move forward on simply because of the age of the case. So I guess the best answer I can give you is that prosecutors have to make decisions every day about the strength of cases, and the age of a case, even with a longer statute of limitations, would still be a consideration, though it would give us the ability to consider the case in the first place based on the merits of that case.
What are your thoughts?
Madam Chair, Senator Shoemaker, I don't have anything to add to Mr. Collins's comments. We regard this as a reasonable compromise between the problem that you've identified regarding staleness and the difficulties raised by these cases. We would probably not oppose longer term, but we're satisfied with the compromise.
David, and then Senator Brandon. Maybe you don't want to comment.
No, sure, I'll comment. I guess I have nothing but sympathy, and our organization has nothing but sympathy in the situations where the victims are telling the truth. The problem that we'd run into is if you have someone who is genuinely innocent and suddenly has to figure out where they were on September 27th, 1977. That's very difficult to line up witnesses when you don't recall what was going on that day. There's a risk of convicting someone who's innocent in that situation. That would be my point.
John, I'm trying to think in one of the earlier incarnations of this bill, perhaps in the 85 session,
I think we also extended the civil statute to permit an individual to bring an action for civil damages, as well as the extending the criminal statute. But aside from that, if you can maintain a criminal action, you could still, in this lengthened statute of prosecution, statute of limitations, seek compensatory damages, couldn't you, as part of the criminal action? If a person, say, were to allege or to establish to a court satisfaction that they needed, say, additional psychological counseling or what have you?
Senator Cohen, Senator Springer, I think the compensatory fine statute, and I'd have to double check to make sure, but I think it applies to crimes of physical injury, which wouldn't always be the case in all of these crimes. It would in some of them. Certainly rape and sodomy would, if not in fact, at least legally, could fall within physical injury, thus resulting in a compensatory fine. Perhaps not in the case of sexual abuse.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Anybody else have any comments about adopting amendments? We, you know, I'm prepared to deal with this bill today. If we carry the other two, we have amendments for. We have to make difficult choices on probably.
Well, I guess there's a long history. Obviously, there's a long history here that I wasn't aware of, and that the period of time that has been arrived at is probably appropriate, all things considered.
I would ask Jack. We have a House bill which came from the House, which has similar. The same time frames, is that a similar 6-year?
Madam Chair,
who has the
that's correct.
Somebody should have. I think we have this. It's a six. It's the same.
Same as this.
Yeah, well, short of our amendments, but I'm talking about the. Oh. It's not any. It's not a longer. It's not a lengthened time.
Has that been passed? Passed out of the House.
Yeah. Madam Chair, House Bill 2431, which I believe has now been passed by the House, contains the same time periods: the 6-year, 4-year.
Right.
But not the 21-year cap.
That's correct. That is new to this bill.
Because we're just a little bit smarter than those guys over there.
Madam Chair, I would move the amendments to Senate Bill 276.
Okay. Senator Hill has moved amendments to Senate Bill 276.
Senator Ms. Hand Gross with proposed amendments.
Is there a date? March, it says.
Yes.
March 89, doesn't have a date on it, but it is Hand Gross. Are there discussion?
Object.
Senator Brennan, object.
I prefer the bill unamended.
Okay. Senator Brennan, call the roll, please.
No.
Brockman?
Aye.
Hill?
Aye.
Aye.
Bringer?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carried. Are we ready to move the bill?
So moved.
Okay, Senator Hill moves Senate Bill 276 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Call the roll, please.
Aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion carried. Thank you. Now, we have amendments. I'd like to make sure we pass them out. If you haven't, if committee members haven't looked at them on the other bills before we have to rush off the committee, we will not take action on further action on the other bills today, but there are complicated issues which you need to think about before you get to committee next time in work sessions, please.
And I would mention that on both of these other bills, 275 and 516, you will find some amendments that are at least partially in concept form. Attached to the amendments in both of those files, there are hand engrossed copies. Those hand engrossed copies only include those amendments that are reached by consensus. They do not include
the others.
Let's start with Senate Bill 275.
Senate Bill 275 is the one relating to the hearsay rule for child victims and sex abuse cases. Again, you will find amendments with the hand and gross copy attached. The amendments that I said were reached by consensus were, again, at the meeting between the parties that are represented here today and myself. If it's the chair's pleasure, I can run through those, or we can have...
Fine. Yeah, however. We need to actually do it as quickly as possible, because right. So, we have committee members who need to leave.
If you'll turn to page 3 of the hand and gross copy, you'll see...
Labor doesn't need to. So we can have...
Yeah, no, it does, but it's not 3 o'clock yet. Yeah. You'll see some of the language that's been added and changed. The first change, it covers a situation where the child is testifying. We added language and is subject to cross-examination. It was felt that that just makes the language that was present more clear. Next change you'll find down on lines 9 and 10. That sentence would then read, however, when the child is unavailable as a witness, the statement may be admitted in evidence only if there's corroborative evidence of the act of sexual conduct and of the defendant's participation in the conduct. It was felt that it was necessary to include that because there are situations where there perhaps is medical evidence that some sexual conduct has taken place, but nothing to tie the defendant in. The third change is a little more straightforward. There was language that if a prosecutor is going to offer this type of evidence that he was required to provide notice to opposing counsel, and the language was somewhat mushy. It just basically said sufficiently advanced to provide fair opportunity. It was agreed among the parties that it was better to have a definite time period. 15 days was chosen because that is the same period that a defense attorney is required to file a notice in rape cases if he intends to offer other evidence of sexual conduct by the victim under Rule 412 of the Oregon Evidence Code. The fourth change has to do with when a child is considered unavailable due to lack of memory. That should probably read substantial lack of memory, but as I stated, these amendments are, again, in concept form. There was some testimony, you'll recall, at the hearing that there was a concern that an incomplete memory, virtually everyone's memory is incomplete, at least to some degree. So, again, the parties reached a consensus that it seemed more appropriate to include the language of substantial lack of memory. Line 16, parties wanted to make sure that the statute was clear that the court shall conduct a hearing regarding the child, whether it be in chambers or on the record. We thought the word may was simply too permissive. The next change also relates to the competency hearing, and we wanted to make clear that the attorneys were included in that, although I think constitutionally they would have to be. We thought the statute should provide for that as well. Next change on line 21, we changed guarantees to indicia, and that is to match the language that is up on line 7. It didn't seem to make any sense to switch terminology in midstream, so it's simply more consistent that way. And then finally, the last change that was agreed upon is down among the criteria factors that indicate reliability. On line 25 and 26, you'll see that one of the factors is that the certainty that the statement was made, including the credibility of the person testifying about the statement. We thought it was appropriate to also include, if it wasn't clear by implication, any motive the person who's relating the statement may have to falsify or distort the statement. So those are the extent of the amendments that were reached by consensus. Those are on page 2 of the amendments. On page 1, you will see amendments that have been proposed by
the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. And perhaps it's best if I leave those to Mr. Groom to explain.
Yeah, I guess I'd ask John and Corey if you have comments with respect to the amendments that Jack has just gone through, if you want to debate them or say they're not relevant or say he's made a mistake, now's your time. Before you get to, then we'll give you another chance to say why you don't like the defense lawyers' amendments. But I just want to, for the record, give you a chance to respond to what Jack's just gone through.
Madam Chair, Corey Streisinger, one typographical error. It should be good cause shown instead of good cause show. Other than that, I have no complaint whatsoever with Mr. Morris' explanation. John?
Yes, Senator Cohen, regarding the amendments proposed on page 2, those were, as the Legislative Council points out, a result of some compromise. Perhaps some things that the DAs might have preferred to have differently, but certainly in the spirit of reasonable compromise, we support those amendments.
Any questions?
I have a question not to the amendments, but to language in the original bill. It refers to the child's parent. And obviously, what we're intending is the...
Could you direct us what page you're speaking?
I'm sorry. It's line 18. As one of those
page
who...
Page 3,
line 18. I'm sorry. One of those who shall be present at the examination, include the attorneys, the child's parent, legal guardian, or other suitable adult. One of the child's parents may very well be the defendant. Is it necessary to clarify that we're talking about the other parent, or is that covered by the reference to other suitable adult?
Madam Chair, Senator Shoemaker, I would read the phrase as the phrase designated by the court as modifying all three. That is, the court would designate parent, legal guardian, or other suitable adult. And if the defendant was a parent, I presume the court would not so designate.
Okay. Is there any other place in here where the reference is made to the child's parent without giving us that way of defining who we're talking about? I had sort of a sense that there might be. And if there is it a problem?
Madam Chair, Senator Shoemaker, I don't see another reference. The language could perhaps be clearer if it said suitable adult, comma, as designated by the court. In other words, to make clear grammatically that that phrase modified all the proceedings.
Well,
yeah.
Let's make a note and have Jack look into that. As designated by the
That does help.
Put that right up front there. I think that's useful. Thank you, Corey. We'll fit that one in. Any other questions? David Groom.
Yes.
To explain the additional amendments that you requested.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, Dave Groom on behalf of OCDLA. My presence here shouldn't send the wrong message. By offering amendments, we're not agreeing that this bill should be passed. We're still in opposition to this bill. The same is true of 516. What we're in position of doing right now is damage control, if we can simply get it to look a little better for our clients. However, I would expect that the full set of legal challenges will be raised once these bills are passed by the defense bar. So the record should reflect we're not agreeing that these bills should be passed. The amendments are sort of an alternative nature. Amendment A would, if these four separate things were added or deleted, would amend out unavailability of the child witness as grounds for allowing a hearsay statement. So that would mean that the hearsay statements would come in only if the child testified. The reason for asking for this is to make it more in line with where Campbell should be. Campbell, the opinion creates a legal fiction. The legal fiction is that a prosecutrix is a witness whether she testifies or not. That is not true. A prosecutrix is only a witness if she testifies. But the Supreme Court, in order to allow hearsay statements in, created the legal fiction that a prosecutrix need not be a witness. So in order to make Campbell cleaner and to make this bill cleaner, we have tried to amend out the unavailability of the child witness so that the hearsay would only come in if the child testifies. In Campbell, what they said could come in is simply a statement that the event occurred, not who did it, and not any of the details. What you would have if this bill passed with this amendment is that if the child testified, then the corroboration, including the statement who did it and the details of the act, would come in. If the child did not testify under Campbell, only the fact that the act happened would be admissible through hearsay, and it would have to be proven by other ways. So we think that that would be the optimum that we would ask for in an amendment to this bill. Going down to B and C, these are less, I guess, less damaging to the bill as far as it is now. If B is adopted, the hearsay statement would come in if the child's not available. Incompetence and lack of memory would not be grounds for unavailability. C would delete incompetence, in other words, add lack of memory back in as a ground for unavailability. So if the child lacked memory, then the child could be declared unavailable, and the hearsay would come in under that. Now for D is an alternative to B and C, or in connection with B and C, and it's also in connection with the National Legal Resource Center. It would add in the language, and I've seen this happen in several cases, where the child simply persists in refusing to testify, either because of fear or for...